It's Friday night on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ailish Forfar, Justin Cuthbert. You just heard from Real Kipper and Bourne about those Maple Leafs that dropped another one in OT. We have lots to go through on the show today. Sean Gentile will join us around 6:30 to help tee up tomorrow's game with Leafs and Penguins. Smith and Jones from Scotiabank Arena around 7 o'clock. They're up on Raps and Bulls on 590 after us. But in studio, on Fuchsia Friday, not planned, is Carolyn Cameron, host of the NHL Sportsnet.
The memo.
Look at us go.
I know. This looks nice. We're bookending it.
You know what? It works.
We should have switched today.
We should have. But it works with our hair color and our skin.
Like good job.
The stylists know. This is what brunette should wear.
I would say I feel silly because I'm all dressed up because we just did the Oilers game. I don't actually come to work looking like that.
Oh, you look great. You look great. But let's start with the Oilers game. 5-0 win.
Yeah.
Maybe a surprise, but maybe they're back.
I think so. This, to me, was their first complete game of the season, and it's great that it's a shutout for Skinner, I think, just as a confidence booster. I think they were 5-for-5 on the PK, too, which is good, even though the Capitals' power play is the worst in the league. I think they're like 3-for-48 or something.
And they have Ovi.
Kind of feel bad for them. Yeah. It's not helping him try and get his goal numbers
Might be a long slog to that record.
Yeah, it's going to be like six more years.
Yeah. But yeah, for the Oilers, like their power play, they had three straight power play goals to end it. McDavid had 4 points. They just were like buzzing from the very start, which was impressive because everyone knows how much they've been struggling, but final game of that 4-game road trip. And the Caps had a 5-game win streak headed in. So just really good. And what we even noticed most of all, I was doing the game with Luke Gazdick, is there was just this moment in the second period where Connor McDavid looked so happy. And then at the start of the third, like Draisaitl was just smiling on the bench. And it might seem kind of frivolous or silly, but it's you just haven't seen that. And Jean Principe got Draisaitl laughing in the post-game interview, too. So
they needed
they're
that.
A lot of checkpoints here. Skinner really, shutout, yep. Smiles from the big guys. They're not consoling each other. I mean, it might be a little frivolous, but I do think it matters. Because if those two guys aren't feeling good about themselves at all, which they haven't, I don't think, until this point, then they really don't have any chance. So, you know, the 4 points from Connor, the smiles, shutout, everything's good there. It's just that we've kind of had a couple points over the season where it's been like, okay, they're going to be all right now. They'll turn things around. Heritage Classic was one of them, and it didn't happen. So is it still just like, okay, they really need another good goaltending performance next time out? Or is it just like, okay, maybe Connor and Leon have gotten past what had been ailing them?
See, I'm still skeptical that this is kind of suddenly the change or the shift in the season. I almost need like 2 or 3 or even 4 games at this point of it. Because it's even just like doing so many Oilers games this year, it's just they've never been able to consistently, other than today, get everything working at once. Like even if they have a pretty good goaltending performance, the offense isn't there. Even if you have some offense, Connor and Draisaitl maybe aren't the ones scoring, which is never usually a problem, right? You'd love secondary scoring for the Oilers. But my point is it just hasn't all been there. So even though it's just one game, it just isn't selling it for me.
A little later in the show, we're going to look at the newest 32 Thoughts written article by Elliot Friedman where he talks about changing his Stanley Cup picks. I'm wondering if you were interested in revising yours as you had selected the Edmonton Oilers as yours. Are you still going to hold on hope?
Actually, I was thinking about that because we have Hockey Central coming up later on Sportsnet West, and that's one of the questions I'm asking Sam and Luke because that was my thought today. It's like, okay, we're at American Thanksgiving. I don't want to, this is such like a sitting on the fence. I don't want to say I think the Florida Panthers, for instance, are going to win the cup or that the Boston Bruins are. But like the Panthers to me are a team that I didn't think would have as good a season this year as they have, especially with all that time Brandon Montour and Aaron Ekblad were out. So second in the Atlantic, I think, headed into tonight. I'd have to check the standings with all the afternoon games. But that's a team where I did rinkside for their first round series upset last year against the Bruins, too. And they just have this confidence. And they're in a market, too, where they're just left alone. And they just do their thing. And I'm surprised that they've played so well this year, considering the injuries. So will they be cup champs? I wouldn't say they're my pick. I think I'm still figuring out what my pick is.
Yeah.
But they're up there and they weren't.
Yeah, I was struggling with Florida a little bit because we're going to kind of talk about who's on our list. But like, it comes down to goaltending again. And do I believe Sergei Bobrovsky can do that again? Like, I'm just not sure because everyone was writing him off before he had that run. And now we're expecting him to do it twice I'm just not quite sure, but maybe they do belong based on everything else and based on what we've seen this season on that list. Are you putting the Vancouver Canucks on that list?
Yes, but I think I just have so much Canadian team trust issues that it just makes me nervous to say it. Yeah. So, yeah. Vancouver's just so fun to watch. And the thing is, so they've got goaltending, right? Like, yep. Demko's numbers have been very good. Not top of the league, but very good.
Pretty close.
Quinn Hughes, I would say, and it's easy to argue right now, is the best player in the league because he leads in scoring and he's also the top defenseman by far, I think. Even though we saw them against Cale Makar, Quinn Hughes right now to me is number one. And they're getting scoring from everywhere. Just, it's so interesting to me in Vancouver how you can have basically the exact same group from a year ago. And just coaching has changed everything. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's more going on in the room too, but this is just, they're just playing at ease. So yeah, I'd put the Canucks up there. But my trust issues, I just worry it's early.
I've got trust issues the other way about the Boston Bruins because I did not think that I had them not making the playoffs this year. And I was like, ah, it's such a good pick. And now I look like an idiot because they're like one of the best teams in the NHL again. Nothing really changed other than losing some of their big players. And they somehow do this again, whether it's like the culture, like the coaching. But I just think that they're probably one of the biggest surprises for me. And my trust issues are like, uh-oh, they're going to do it again.
I think after being around them in the first round last year, mm-hmm. too, their culture, they're just at ease. I think they're just, they look after each other. They're confident, but not bordering on cocky. Mm-hmm. And Jim Montgomery, I think, is just the perfect coach for it. Did you guys see the video this week, too, with
awesome.
The dad's trip? And it was his pregame speech, Jim Montgomery saying, like, play for the names in your back. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm ready to like run through a brick wall for this guy.
It's a busy day for you. A lot of games. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's like a roadmap that you have to follow, but I think you end up at Dallas and Calgary later on. So let's do a little Calgary. Let's do a little Dallas. With Calgary, is like what's happening in Edmonton, aside from today, I guess, the best thing that's happened to the Calgary Flames in that it kind of takes a little bit of the attention because there's a lot of expectation, not as high on Calgary, but the results are, and again, not equally as bad, but still not what they wanted. So is the provincial thing kind of shading them or shrouding the attention that would be on them in terms of, you know, the negative light and the disappointment of, hey, we got rid of Daryl Sutter. We want to move forward. We're better than that. And it's kind of the same thing.
I think so, because I think it's split the attention. Because right around the Heritage Classic, when the Flames lost that game, and as one of you mentioned, that seemed like the turning point for the Oilers that wasn't, that's when, okay, all the negative focus was on the Flames. They've been pretty good in the last month. They've got a really tough stretch coming up, which worries me a little bit. I think it's 5 games in 9 nights. And even in the next, like, I was looking at the schedule through to mid-December. They've got the Stars twice, like first tonight. They've got the Golden Knights twice. Like, they've got the Canucks. It's tough. It's tough going coming up. But, yes, like, Connor Zary, who's back in the lineup tonight, the rookie, he's been really good, and he's actually given Nazem Kadri a boost. Jonathan Huberdeau's looking a bit better. Mm-hmm. Jacob Markstrom's kind of settling in, although there's always kind of maybe one goal every game or two where he has a great game, but he'll let kind of a softer one in. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it was good for the Flames that the Oilers have been struggling as much as they are, but credit to the Flames themselves because they've been able to find their game at least a bit more consistent.
Yeah, they can finish 1 of 2 in Alberta, which I guess is something. Dallas is a fascinating team to me. It's like they, you know, Vegas is kind of the destination, the trendy place where guys like Petrangelo and Stone wanted to end up and they went there and they won a cup and everything's great. It's like tax things and there's lifestyle reasons and all that. But like Dallas to me is like mini Vegas in that sense.
Yeah.
Because they had something, and they had some good talent, and they weren't quite there, but they've been able to just pick up guys who either scrap heap or just, you know, maybe on the last 5 years of their career and want to play for a little less, and it seems like a lot of them are choosing Dallas. Do you feel like they've built something that's maybe not sustainable, but, like, could work in this moment as a destination NHL team and one that might be able to win a Stanley Cup? They're really good. They've got all the benchmarks you'd want of a Stanley Cup contender.
I think so. Even Blake Coleman of the Flames, he lives in Texas in the offseason, and he had all the Flames over for dinner last night for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a clip. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, you're not getting a house like that.
No. That's like Instagram. You're on Instagram. Yeah. You're like, here's this
house
in Texas.
I want to move to Texas.
Like,
yeah.
How many houses are
they pay you to live there, I swear.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think it is a destination. The thing that's so interesting about Dallas is, like, they're arguably a cup contender, but they've just always been right there, but they haven't been at the top of the West. Because even still, I would consider, not just based on the standings, but Vegas a better team, the Canucks a better team. But they're just so skilled, I think, or talented because they have such a good mixture of youth and experience. Like Pavelski's still doing his thing in his late 30s. And Robertson continues to do well. Like they have so many good pieces across the board. So, yeah, I'm sure taxes and climate and that have something to do with it.
But they've drafted well.
Yes, they have.
Yeah. They've drafted well, too.
We're chatting with Carolyn Cameron, host of the NHL on Sportsnet. Big night ahead on the network. Lots of games to go through. We just finished seeing the Maple Leafs drop one in overtime. But I want to ask you about William Nylander. Mm-hmm. Did you see his Rogers commercials, by the way?
It is very good.
Not only, you know, company guy here.
He wasn't wearing his coat. I was upset. Where's the puffy coat?
He looked good, though. It was a fun commercial. Check it out online, of course. But he has just, I guess, morphed into the celebrity superstar that maybe was always there, but didn't always get the limelight, didn't always get the stardom. He goes to Sweden. He has this amazing trip, and it feels like the price keeps going up. But besides the price, just watching William Nylander this season has been a joy.
He's so good, and I'm just so, like, think how he lives his life. He just doesn't seem to worry about anything. Like, I'd like to take a master class in how Nylander thinks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been good seeing kind of his stardom rise, because it's, I forget who said it. Maybe it was Tavares. But one of his teammates said Toronto's kind of the perfect place for Nylander. Mm-hmm. And when have you ever heard anyone say that about Toronto, right? It's like people have to deal with playing here. Mm-hmm. But for Nylander, it's just been great. I couldn't believe in OT, though, the like double post and crossbar to end his streak. That was disappointing.
Yeah, that was like ultimate knife edge stuff, because we always joke around about Mitch Marner's streak last year and how it was this huge thing for him.
Yeah,
huge
so
thing
fun. For remember that game too, to like try and get an empty net?
Yeah, it was like the most joy, like, and it was just like, it was kind of like a little embarrassing, but it was also really fun.
Yeah,
it was our Stanley Cup.
It was huge for Mitch Marner, and I don't think it would mean as much to William Nylander, but if that goes in, we're not talking about, you know, the effects maybe of Sweden travel. We're not talking about a point streak that is over. Maybe Nylander goes 20, 25 games, and we're talking about this unbelievable run to start the season that could put him in a different category of superstardom altogether, and yet it hits three posts and it doesn't go in, and now we're talking maybe a little bit negatively over the next 24 hours since they play again tomorrow night about the Leafs. But the thing for me is only 5 wins in regulation for the Leafs in 18 games. I mean, the mark of a good team generally is you fill up that regulation / overtime win stat column on NHL.com. 5 from 18 is not good. Where are you at on the Leafs?
No, that's a really good point. And then it also makes me think of first round of the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Finally beating Tampa, but thinking how long an OT it took for them to get there. Where am I with the Leafs? Like, they're such a good, talented team. And to me, they'll make the playoffs, right? That's in the last few years, that just hasn't been the concern. But there's still the concern for me is how far will they make it? And in that, my concerns right now, like today, the top line wasn't great. Mm-hmm. And I really like Nyes, but he hasn't been as strong in the last few games as he can be. So it's still trying to sort out the lines. And then the big thing is obviously in the long run and playoffs defensively. But now with Klingberg being out, that frees up over $4 million. So now it's about kind of the excitement of what defensemen can they get on the market. Zadorov. But
to say that stretch with you said the Flames have a really tough stretch. It's like, well, maybe. Yeah. They'll know at the end of the stretch who's available.
But I feel like I'm where I am with the Leafs every year at this time. Like, they're good, they're talented, but it's not all together yet.
And it's almost like there's a couple excuses built in because Boston has this amazing start. Well, you're not going to win the division.
They lost today. Two regulation losses.
Regulation wins, not their problem for the Boston Bruins. So it's like, okay, you can redefine expectations again. Just get into the playoffs. Just fill the Klingberg hole at your leisure. And it feels like, again, no pressure, no stakes, regular season. And I don't know if that's the best thing, but I guess it's not the worst thing in the world.
Okay, last one for you, Carolyn. Canada winning Billie Jean King Cup.
Yeah, look at this.
I know. We didn't get a chance really to chat with it because it was, you know, our show was at different times. But incredible achievement, first ever. And I just think I know you're the big tennis fan, so I wanted to ask your thoughts on how we even got there.
So it was really cool because similar to the Davis Cup run last year for Canada's men, it was totally unexpected because they had Leilani Fernandez, who was outstanding, and Gabriela Dabrowski, who's a multi-time Grand Slam champ in doubles, and she did her thing. But they had this 18-year-old out of nowhere who just had a really good September, winning challenger-level events, which are like lower-level, traveling the world, doing it in basically empty buildings, not even arenas. So Satusic, she just came out and was an absolute star and was able to lead with Layla them all the way to the final. So I couldn't believe it watching it. It was just so, so cool.
Yeah, we were like, I think I was like, wait a second, Canada's winning again. Canada's in the finals. Yeah. We were talking about this, like this went under the rug almost because we just didn't expect it. So those are really fun stories to cover.
Yeah, that was fun.
Davis Cup vibe. So I love that.
Unfortunately,
a lot.
The men. Then I was watching the men last week and I was kind of getting excited and it was just one and done.
Well,
that's
just okay.
It's still the same. Still call it the double, just not in the same year.
Yeah, right? True. Yeah, for a week. For a week, we had both.
Exactly.
There you go. Yeah. That was a special week. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Big night tonight.
Thank you.
We'll let you go in your fuchsia. And we'll have you stop by again down the road. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, so 32 Thoughts. We just mentioned this a little while ago. Elliot wrote a new article, and we wanted to, you know, take a little bit of his content because it was a really good.
We're stealing Elliot's content.
Yeah, we are stealing Elliot's stuff. We're allowed to. We're teammates. So he wrote at the beginning of the season, along with I think it was 20 Sportsnet personalities. Everybody picked their Stanley Cup champ, and we know that 10 of them, 50%, picked the Edmonton Oilers to win. Elliot also wrote down and you, yes. Elliot wrote down I think it's around 10 teams that he thought could win the cup at the start of the season, and then now has shown the difference from the beginning to the, you know, American Thanksgiving time. So the newest additions are the Boston Bruins, the Florida Panthers, the Los Angeles Kings, and the New York Rangers, eliminating the Edmonton Oilers, the New Jersey Devils, the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the Toronto Maple Leafs. So a little switcheroo on the bottom four of his selections, which got us thinking about who we actually would have in our can win the cup rankings. But he got rid of Toronto, which is a pretty big thing to do in this market. Doesn't think they have a chance to win the Stanley Cup.
It's the tough decision. He could have just, you know, left them on. Yeah, maybe, maybe. But he didn't. He took them off. That says something about their start. Mm-hmm. But again, we talked about it. 5 wins from 18 games of regulation is not good enough. And they're not there yet. They just lost their $4 million defenseman, who may or may not have ever gotten to the point where he could have filled that role. They still got work to do. I mean, the Maple Leafs are in a position now where to be considered, I think they would have to add, and they're going to have to make some changes to the roster, some improvements to the roster in order to get back onto that list.
So Elliott's list: Carolina, Colorado, Dallas, Vegas, Boston, Florida, LA, and the New York Rangers are his four newest ones. We have a similar-ish, me and you, our picks for who could win the Stanley Cup now. Do you want to go through? Oh, here they are.
There we go. Okay, so we got the Golden Knights each, which is an easy one, right?
Yes.
Bruins each, easy one. Avalanche each, easy one. Dallas, I'm seeing on both. Mm-hmm. Rangers, I'm seeing on both. We still got the Leafs, but I got a little asterisk.
Yeah, so please explain your highlighted ones, because those need a little work.
And, I mean, I kind of just said it. Like, they got to add. Like, if you look at this Maple Leafs defense core, there's no way. There's no way you're winning a Stanley Cup. But if they just ransack the Calgary Flames and just take two or maybe three defensemen from them, I mean, you're looking at a defense corps that can win a Stanley Cup, are you not? Mm-hmm. It's all dependent for the Maple Leafs on whether or not they can add. The other ones are a little bit different. The ones that I have bolded there, the Panthers and Hurricanes, I think maybe bolded for different reasons, but I do think they still would have to add.
I feel like I'm losing faith. I have the same feeling every year. And
with who?
Well, like, look where the Devils are starting this season right now, right?
Right.
Yeah. And the Hurricanes are always that exciting team to cheer for. I just kind of lost.
So you lost faith in both.
I lost a little bit of faith in them.
I'm leaving the door open for the Devils because Jack Hughes has missed, you know, a large part of the season. And I think they could get there, but I think the acquisition that I'm insinuating with that bold is that they might need a goaltender. They can't stop the puck right now. And they went into this season maybe just hoping that what they had could get them through. And it's the same story for me with the Carolina Hurricanes. Like, they just can't score enough to win. They've been one of the best teams in the NHL for the better part of a half decade. More than that. Better part of a decade. But they just can't score enough when it matters the most. And for that reason, until they put someone else into that top six, I'm going to consider them non-contenders.
I can't help but notice that neither of us have the Vancouver Canucks on our list. And that one could be one of those screenshots of cold takes exposed.
Yeah, I think that might be
what we can.
That might be our blind spot. I think it's the scar tissue Carolyn was talking
about.
It's
the scar tissue.
Like, I just don't believe until, and again, I was like, I was banging the drum for the Oilers. Like, no, it's not just this year. It's going to be multiple years for the Edmonton Oilers. They finally are good enough to win. And then they show this. It's like every time you put your neck out there for a Canadian team, you get burned. So maybe it's a better thing that we're just letting them be.
I will say from Elliot, myself, and you, the addition of the Rangers, the addition of Boston, and the addition of Florida seems to be a reoccurring theme. Three teams that I don't believe many people thought would be this real this early.
And he's got LA there. And I'm not there on LA.
I have LA too. I've always been excited about the Kings. Okay. I just want them to do something. But I just saw they're 9-0. They just won again on the road, and now they have a road record, undefeated on the road. I think they're a gritty team. Most people kind of just like forget they exist. But I won't.
They do. I mean, it's easy. It is easy to forget about them a little bit because they're built in a way that's maybe not the sexiest thing ever. And they play in the time zone that they do. But I still feel like they're missing something that Carolina's missing too. The absence of like that dominant scorer that's going to carry you through, that can do the Matthew Tkachuk thing, that can do the Kucherov thing.
That's what the trade deadline's for.
Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid thing. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not ready to put them on the list yet.
All right. We might have to redo this list in a month or two, see where we're at. But that was inspired
whenever
by
Elliot does it.
Inspired by Elliot's article up on sportsnet.ca, it's called Ditching Turkeys for a New Set of Stanley Cup Favorites. It's the newest 32 Thoughts written edition. Okay.
So he's calling the Maple Leafs turkeys, too.
He might have. I think he said they were turkeys.
Jeez.
Let's take a look at some action tonight. Time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. The Raptors are on a little later. We got them on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, 7:30 p.m. against the Chicago Bulls. Unfortunately, both teams are officially out of the play-in tournament. The Raptors and Chicago won't really be playing for anything tonight, but pride. So with pride on the line.
On a really fancy court.
On a beautiful court here at Scotiabank Arena, I'm going to go with Pascal Siakam to get a double-double. He has been a bright star the last couple games for the Toronto Raptors. And plus 275 is... It's good. I'm not turning that down. I like it a lot. So Pascal Siakam, a double-double. He got one last game. And I think tonight there's no Zach LaVine. He's questionable. I don't know if we've got the official injury report yet. So I think Pascal will be probably the top point getter as well. I know you like that bet.
Yeah, I do. Pascal's 30-point games all included double-doubles. It's something connected with his point scoring, gives him a little bit more in the other stat categories. Maybe that's a little bit more minutes because they're just riding the hot hand. But yeah, an opportunity to score tonight for sure against the Chicago Bulls. I'm going with the Winnipeg Jets. It's a bit of a rivalry game, I guess-ish, with the Florida Panthers tonight. But the story, though, is Rick Bowness. Rick Bowness returning to the Winnipeg Jets after an absence to deal with, you know, a family matter and an illness with his wife. They're plus 120 tonight. I'm always chasing plus money, but this is more of a narrative and feeling pick. The guys play hard for the returning head coach, and they've been really performing well without Rick Bowness around. So I think that continues. I think they're starting off on a good foot. They're feeling it coming in. They're going to have a little extra motivation in addition to the other head coach with Paul Maurice on the opposite side for the Florida Panthers. So a little coaching narrative, a little plus money on the Winnipeg Jets. Plus 120 tonight is my pick.
I love it. That was Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. In the next hour of our show, we're grinding on a Friday night. We got an extra half hour on our show tonight. We'll have Sean Gentile join us. He's from The Athletic and the Puck Soup podcast. Tomorrow, the Toronto Maple Leafs play the Pittsburgh Penguins. It is time to revisit Kyle Dubas' time as a general manager for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll go through that with him. We'll talk about Erik Karlsson, their newest addition, of course, the big one of the offseason. We're going to do our first mailbag segment. We had you guys send some stuff in via Instagram or Twitter or the text line. We have a couple questions, so stay tuned for that. We'll go through a couple fan submissions. And then at 7 o'clock, we'll be on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Smith and Jones will join us courtside from Scotiabank Arena on that court that was slippery and hopefully isn't anymore, and help us tee up tonight's game against the Bulls.
And you raised a good question because we got Hoops Hype's global rankings right now in the NBA, and a familiar name is number two behind Nikola Jokic. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, currently the number two performing NBA player right now, and you brought up a really good point. Is he the highest performing Canadian in their league right now? With Connor McDavid struggling, with Cale Makar maybe not outpointing Quinn Hughes right now, with no one to really speak of, although Javon Holland, nice play tonight in today's Black Friday
game. He is the best Canadian in the NFL, most likely.
But I think there's a good chance that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the number one Canadian athlete performing in professional sports right now. So we'll go into that.
All right, all that to come on the Fan pregame on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan will be back after this. It's Ailish and Justin, Fan pregame.
breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan Pregame Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin. Penguins are currently playing the Buffalo Sabres. It is a 0-0 tie halfway through the first period. They'll be on the back-to-back, so will the Maple Leafs tomorrow night at PPG Paints
Just
Arena.
Less time to turn it around, advantage Leafs.
That's it. They got, what, like 3 or 4 more hours to travel? So
it's key. Anyone blaming the Sweden thing
might
want to
be like minus 500 on the money line after that. A big one tomorrow, though, emotionally, spiritually, in terms of remembering those from the past. See how the Maple Leafs fare when they see Kyle Dubas up in the press box. Let's bring in Sean Gentile of The Athletic and the Puck Soup podcast. Sean, happy American Thanksgiving. What are you eating?
Oh, my God, you too. I have, like, I don't have any leftovers. I was just thinking that.
Wow.
I did a really bad
You did it right, really though. Bad.
I mean, I did a bad job of raiding the table at my aunt's last night. Like, I should have bagged up more stuff and snagged it. Yeah, we're looking a little thin here. not my best showing.
See, that's like, I mean, you take matters in your hands and you solve the problem. But the worst is when you're like, yeah, I'll take some food home, and there's like nothing on the plate. Like, this is not even half a lunch.
No, it's a waste.
I'm like, I need 2 plates. I need them stacked onto each other, and I need to go home with it. Right now, go ahead.
I think the only thing I actually came away with was a bunch of Rice Krispie treats. I had like maybe one glass of wine too many and rolled up with a bag full of Rice Krispie treats. So whatever, we'll make it work.
So in the spirit of Thanksgiving, this is, you can take this one any way you want. Maybe you're talking food. Maybe you're talking about hockey deals. But what's on Kyle Dubas's plate right now?
Oh, I don't. He needs to figure out what's going on with his team's power play and find whether that means, you know, I don't know. Like, everybody here wants them to fire Todd Reardon, who's the assistant coach, who's in charge of that, because the unit's terrible, right? They're under 14% on the season. As far as the conversion rate's concerned, they just went 0-for-5 in a game against the Rangers when they lost 1-0 and only generated 5 actual shots on net over the course of all those opportunities. So that's like the issue of the week here, and it's really been the issue of the season, because you have a team that's, you know, in the wild card chase but needs every point they can get. When you have like one element of the team that's, you know, scuffling as badly as that, you know, that could loom pretty large. So yeah, that's the issue of the day. And I don't know if there's anything Dubas can do. I mean, they're up against the cap as always, but that's like that's the pressing issue. So we'll see how they address it, whether it's a coaching thing or a personnel thing or whatever, because something needs to be done about it.
Zooming out a little bit, because we haven't talked Kyle Dubas since the infamous press conference that was.
Yeah, we talked about him a little bit.
It was a bit spicy. After that, this season, we haven't really focused too much on the Pittsburgh Penguins. So what's the fan base feeling about Kyle Dubas? His approval rating, has the introduction of a new general manager been smooth in Pittsburgh?
I think the approval rating is pretty high, because a lot of the stuff he did during, and I know I just sat there and, you know, dumped on a power play for 30 seconds, but a lot of the stuff he did over the course of the offseason, he had a tough job, and a lot of it's paid off. You know, he remade the bottom six. That group of players has kind of started to round into form a little bit, and it's nobody interesting, right? It's Lars Eller, it's Nola Chari, it's, you know, Matt Nieto and Vinny Hinostroza. Like, these are not, you know, difference-making players necessarily, but that was also one of the biggest issues with his team over the last bunch of years, was that, you know, they just didn't have any productive NHL players really on the they were short on them on the third and fourth line. So he brought in a bunch of guys who, you know, at least, you know, fit a need and have a skill set and are at least capable of, you know, contributing in limited minutes. And that was the single biggest thing he set out to do in the offseason. And also Tristan Jarry, who's, you know, whatever, inconsistent on his best days in net, he's been good over the last month too. So those are sort of like the pressing issues that were facing Dubas. I think those are the things that the fan base wanted to see, was, you know, solidify the bottom six and try to figure out what to do in net. And for the time being, you know, even though this team isn't perfect, they do have problems. Those two elements at least are they're holding up there in the bargain, if nothing else.
So, tackling, excuse me, priority one. And that's one thing that Kyle Dubas does really well. Brings in, you know, bit mm-hmm. players, if you want to call them that, yep. that can fill a role for you. That's kind of right up his alley. But I wonder because, yeah, he did well with those additions, and yet this team is still, and it's early, and the games played matters at this point, but fifth in the wild card and chasing. You know, mm-hmm. the mandate is to win with Sidney Crosby, and Sidney Crosby's not the problem, but with blending new and old, do you think Kyle Dubas even has a hand that he can win with? Like, even if he does a great job at the margins, is it good uh-huh. enough in Pittsburgh to have a winner?
I think for as badly as things went in the last couple of years under Ron Hextall, where the vibes are just terrible, right? Like, last year you have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, you know, basically being completely healthy over the course of the season and really productive, and they blew it. They wasted a year where those two guys were as productive as you could reasonably expect them to be at, you know, 35 and 36. So, yeah, I think to some degree the expectations have changed here, and I think people do realize that the roster wasn't in a great spot when Dubas took over, and I think the overall vibe around the fan base and around that team is like, this might not work, but we at least need to give it our best possible shot. And I think that's sort of what Dubas's, you know, task was heading into the season. I think he did it about as good as you could reasonably expect. Like this is not – there was enough going wrong with this team that it wasn't going to be a one-off season fix to turn them back into a legit, you know, true, like, top-shelf Stanley Cup contender. That just wasn't a reasonable expectation because of the way things went bad. So I think people did kind of adjust accordingly, and they're saying, look, if the alternative is selling off and doing some kind of soft rebuild and whatever, that's no good. That shouldn't be an option. So let's just, you know, play the cards that were dealt. And I think Dubas has done that about as well as could be expected.
I mean, they landed the big fish, Erik Karlsson, of course, who was very highly touted this last couple months. He ends up with Pittsburgh, and I think it was a bit of a slower start, but it looks like things are clicking a little bit more. Has he been the spark that the Penguins needed? Is there still more you expect from somebody with the pedigree that is Erik Karlsson?
I think at 5-on-5, he's been really good. Like, he's been... Maybe not producing on the level that he was with the Sharks, but I think that would have been an unreasonable expectation. You know, you don't expect defensemen to come out and have back-to-back 100-point season. That doesn't happen all that often. So I think he's been good. I think he's been better, certainly better defensively with his team than he was in San Jose. I think that was certainly a concern when you look at some of the 5-on-5 numbers. They were ugly, but he's at least, you know, patched up that part of it, and it's certainly part of that, playing with a better team than he was with San Jose, but whatever. You can only play the games that are in front of you. I think the issue for him is in the spot where, you know, he hasn't made the difference that people maybe hoped or anticipated. Again, is on the power play. Like that unit is ugly, and you guys are going to see it firsthand, you know, firsthand tomorrow. It's a group that at some point in the season was at least generating chances. You know, their issue is that maybe they couldn't finish. But in terms of, you know, if you look into shot maps and expected goal, you know, numbers and stuff, they were doing what they needed to do. That is not true anymore. That's gone out the window over the last couple of weeks. And Carlson's part of that, just like Sidney Crosby's part of it, and just like Evgeny Malkin's part of it. As good as those guys have been at 5-on-5, they're doing their part. You know, when it comes to that portion of the game, they just look lost at 5-on-4 right now, and it's turned into a real problem.
We're chatting with Sean Gentile of The Athletic and the Puck Soup podcast. Okay, it's not often that I get to ask you about an alumni of the Dartmouth Big Green like myself, Drew O'Connor. How's that young kid doing? Because we are a proud group when we get to see a Big Green in the NHL.
Ailish, I knew you were a Dartmouth grad. I was wondering if we were.
Of course,
we
I had to ask.
Of course,
does not turn down an opportunity.
No, this doesn't get him much. Okay.
Why would he? That'd be bad business. Come on. No, he's good. He's in that mix of people of guys I mentioned before. You know, where he is kind. He's been, you know, he's an NHL player on the bottom six. And that was what, again, going by, I know like every discussion of Kyle Dubas turns into a referendum of Ron Hextall, right? Because you can't talk about one without the other, because Dubas has a job because of how, you know, bad Hextall was at his. That was always one of the more confusing parts of, you know, their roster over the last couple of years. You blame Hextall for it a little bit. You maybe blame Mike Sullivan for it. But it was like, Drew O'Connor should be playing, like, regular minutes. He should be in the mix more. And I think we've seen more from him this season. The dude's he's a relevant player. He brings something to the lineup. And for a team that, I know I'm, like, repeating myself here, but for a team that struggled to get, you know, any sort of shot in the arm from its depth players over the last bunch of the years, I think that's a welcome thing. So he's been good.
Yeah, proud of him. Shot in the arm, go green. Go big green?
Yes, big just green.
Lean green, whatever, yes. Whatever it is. Sean, your colleague in The Athletic, Rob Rossi, wrote a must-read about Alex Ovechkin, Sidney Crosby, their impact on the NHL. Alex Ovechkin quoted in that saying, "We saved the NHL." On the hyperbole meter, where does that one rank for you?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Rob told me that Ovechkin said that. He sat down with Ovechkin a month ago, let's say. Like, it's been that quote has been in Rob's notebook for a minute. And as soon as he told me what he said, I was like, let's go. Like, this is the headline. This is the lead. Like, whatever. Okay. 1 to 10 on the hyperbole meter. I can't give it a 10 because there's certainly, like, there's kernels of truth there. Mm-hmm. I think we need to remember what bad shape the league was in coming out of the lockout. But it's closer to a 10 than a 1. let's go with that.
Okay, so that's I would probably go closer to 1. But yeah, what a resume for Ovechkin. All-time leading scorer in the NHL if he catches Gretzky, which we expect him to do. And savior of the NHL. Co-savior, I guess, with Sidney Crosby. But, you know, comparing those two is always interesting. Because right now it seems like Crosby has more gas in the tank than Ovechkin. Ovechkin, not really as much of a part of Washington's slight turnaround here, while Crosby's still like, hey, good win of Selke this year. It's like got a lot of things going on. Is there still juice for that matchup? Is it less so? Is it, you know, a lot of parading around or celebrating the fact that Crosby may outlast Ovechkin, or at least seems that he will? Like, what's the state of that interplay and rivalry right now?
I think this is the first year where it feels like they're kind of the paths are diverging, right? Justin, I think you said it, where Crosby, I mean, he's like up towards the top of the, he's, I don't know if he's still leading the league in 5-on-5 points, but he was really close last I looked, right? Like, you're talking about a dude who, you know, if that power play was even remotely competent, we'd be talking about this guy winning an Art Ross at 36, right? Like, he's unreal. He's putting up goal scoring and point production numbers that we saw from him when he was 25 or 26, 10 years later. Right. And Ovechkin, yeah, he's, you know, for as surprising as the Caps have been, they deserve credit for where they are in that division. It does seem like, you know, the paths are starting to diverge a little bit. They're entering a different chapter of the rivalry and of that relationship. And it'll be interesting to see, because we're not used to this. Like, they've always, you know, the teams fluctuate. Maybe they've been, you know, true cup contenders at different points, but they've always also been super ultra mega elite NHL players. And I think we're fast approaching the point where at least one of them probably isn't going to be able to say that. So yeah, I'm fascinated by it. I'm fascinated to see what happens as the season progresses. And as we see, have a few more matchups between those two guys head to head for sure.
We got one last one for you, Sean, before we let you go pick at your leftovers. Penguins are going to retire Jágr's number on February 18th. Why did it take so long to get to this point?
So I'm like, I've talked about this before. There's like a Lemieux generation of kids who grew up watching prime Lemieux. And then there's a Crosby generation. And then there's a Jágr generation. There's like, and it's mainly guys who are my age. I'm 37. Like, Jaromír Jágr, pound for pound, is maybe my favorite hockey player of all time. So, like, you know, I was always waiting for something like this in one capacity or another. But it's because he wanted, a lot of it was on him, honestly. And he wanted to do it. He wanted to do it when he was done playing, and he wasn't. And he still technically isn't done. Like, there's always a chance that he ends up suiting up for the Czech League team that he owns. But, like, you know, the guy's in his 50s now. Like, I think everyone's, like, finally ready to cut the charade. At least he is. So there's a new president of the franchise. His name's Kevin Acklin. He was really gung-ho about making this happen and really convincing Jaromir Jagr that it was the right time for this to happen. So, yeah, there was some ugliness and some drama, you know, coming out of in that relationship, especially after he spurned the team to sign with the Flyers, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago or however long it is at this point. That's been patched over. The issue now was that he needed to be comfortable saying, like, that, you know, he's done and it was something that he wanted to do, and he's finally there. It'll be good for everybody.
It'd be nice to resurface some Jagr mullet pictures too. I'm sure there'll be some people with wigs in the stands on that night.
You can. That's a mortal lock. Absolutely, 100% chance.
Oh, that's great. Well, we appreciate you coming on tonight. Enjoy the festivities. Enjoy tomorrow night. It'll be a big one for both sides.
Absolutely, you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. That's Sean Gentile of the Athletic and the Puck Soup podcast. I was once Jagr for Halloween.
Were you?
I got a mullet and I did a kind of like scruffy beard and I had a Jagr shirt.
A little Jofa helmet?
No.
No?
It's a lot I
think
those
Jagr,
are hard to find.
Jagr, I mean, we need a 30 for 30 on Jagr.
I also
think if there was one NHL player who I could have dropped in the social media era, it would be Jaromir Jagr.
Well, like, we've seen pictures of Jaromir Jagr.
Like, he's had some social media shine.
Yes, I don't know if he knew he wanted that.
Not the extent that we might have gotten. Like, I think he would have had a lot of attention on social media.
Yes.
He was living a different life than I think most athletes are living now. And most athletes maybe have to be buttoned up because of, you know, the social media thing. But if Jagr did what Jagr did with social media around, there would have been a lot of Jagr stories.
I feel like he would have been a guy, too, that wouldn't have turned down an endorsement. And they would have been some weird endorsements. Maybe when he gets his jersey retired, he realizes he has all this North American love still. And he comes on over and he gets in some TV commercials.
He really is holding a lot up just playing every random Sunday or any random Sunday in the Czech League.
He's still fit. Like, he could probably be a fourth liner for some teams in this league. San Jose Sharks.
Maybe the Sharks. You're right.
Okay, we have a couple minutes here before we take a break. So we're going to get into our first Friday mailbag. The fun Friday mailbag, the fan Friday mailbag, the fuchsia Friday mailbag.
I'll get fuchsia for next week.
Okay. Well, you could never wear fuchsia.
What are you talking about?
You have fuchsia?
I don't, but I could.
Wow. If you wore fuchsia on Friday, we can make a thing of it.
Well,
see, you're already regretting it.
I'm just saying, like, I have to buy something. And then I was like, what about the next one? Am I wearing the same fuchsia?
No, it's okay. Don't you worry.
How about fan mailbag?
Let's do fan Friday mailbags.
Okay.
Okay. So most of these were through Instagram. We have four to go through and maybe one in the next break. Okay. Do I read who submitted it?
That's your call.
Okay. The question is, more likely to get traded, Bo/Vlad or McDavid/Draisaitl? I assume it's like one from each collection, not both and both.
Oh, I was looking at it the other way.
Oh,
I was thinking
both.
It was Bo and Vlad versus McDavid and Draisaitl.
Okay, well, answer how you'd like then.
Okay, so either way, it's Bo and Vlad.
100% it's Bo and Vlad.
Because there are no circumstances
singular
by which.
Or as a pair, it's Bo and Vlad.
Like, just think about history. Like, if the Oilers are the team that traded the two greatest hockey players in the history of the sport, starting with Wayne and then doing Connor 35 years later, whatever it is.
You cannot do that.
You cannot do that,
there
ever.
There would be people burning,
like,
down that stadium.
McDavid, just let him play every single game until he wants to walk. If he wants to walk, it's done. You can't trade Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. Under any circumstances, unless he demands it before a season, giving you ample time, and still, I don't know if I'm doing it. Bo and Vlad, we're getting pretty close to the clock here.
And they haven't paid everywhere either. Everywhere you go on Twitter, someone's trading them. Some insider's already trading
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's easily Bo and Vlad, and I think there's a good opportunity. It's Bo and Vlad before it's either McDavid or Draisaitl.
Yeah. Even though the Oilers were at the lowest of low ever in, like, their franchise the last week, trading them seemed like so unfathomable. it was, okay, well, they're just not going to sign here again. But to actually be like, hey, I'm Ken Holland, I'd like to trade Connor McDavid for what? Like, what?
Also, Connor McDavid's agent or former agent now runs the team.
No,
so it feels unbelievably far-fetched.
That was
maybe not as like strong of opinion, yeah, because if it's like, Draisaitl could be like, I'm not doing this anymore.
True.
And then you got to do it. But
that was a great submission. Thank you. Second one here. Who would make the better F1 driver, Eilish or Justin? There is no question about this myself.
Yeah,
I have also been to an F1 race, so I get it.
That's not why it's you.
But why is it not? What else? I'm a great driver.
I've seen you back into spots with speed that I'm not comfortable going forward.
Well, sorry, I'm a good reverse
I'm in
park.
Drive going slower than you're going reverse parking into small spots in parking lots in Toronto underground.
I'm in a rush to get out of my car and get into work. I'm excited.
Playing with fire.
I'm a great reverse
parker.
And
you haven't done anything bad yet, so I'm assuming that your aggressiveness would pay off on a track.
I would definitely be.
Who's getting to the grocery store safer? I'm getting to the grocery store safer.
I've never, knock on wood, ever had any incidences, okay? I'm an active driver. I don't wait for things to happen. I create them.
In the Fan Morning Show days, too, we golfed a couple times after.
And I would beat you.
You wouldn't beat me. I would see you rip by me, like, every single time.
Mostly for fun, though. Like, and I'd wave at you on the highway.
That's why you're, winning.
Way better than
that's why you're the F1 driver.
Yeah. Watch out, Max Verstappen. I'm coming for you. Okay. Here's our third mailbag question. Is now the time to cash in on Nylander while stock is as high as it's ever going to be? Oh, my goodness. I couldn't imagine. Maybe two. 5 games in when it was like, oh, he's really for real.
Well, now, it's
too much. It's too much to imagine trading William Nylander. Like, what are you cashing in on is my question. What do you need right now? A great defenseman? There's no trade scenario where you win with trading Nylander.
Yeah, what's the goal? Are you trying to win a Stanley Cup?
Are you trying to win one in like 10 years? Like, I don't know.
There are teams that, you know, if you're trying to expedite the process of rebuilding and you have one standout asset and his name's William Nylander, and yes, this would be the time to cash in. But the goal, again, for this Maple Leafs team over the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever years, is to win a Stanley Cup. And I think William Nylander is one of the guys that could help you do that. And the parts that you would get back in return, maybe they added something, but it's definitely less likely than William Nylander. Or it's less likely that that'll help you get there compared to William Nylander.
Like, timelines wouldn't work out that you would win any win now type of scenario, right? Like, there's nothing you can get from William Nylander that's going to make your team better at this moment, but maybe it's some first-round picks. Like, that's great.
Yeah, but they're not in the position to recoup first-round picks.
No.
If you concocted even the best possible trade, which is probably another scorer who earns less, plus a stud defenseman who earns the same that, you know, combined with William Nylander, then maybe, but I don't think you're a better team. So they're not going to do that. It's not time.
The time has passed, and now you must pay him. Okay. Next mailbag question. How long until Zach Wilson is playing in the CFL?
I'll let you handle this one.
Why?
I answer the first one first, or the last one first. He's never playing in the CFL. He's not good enough. You know
that's the way you're going. I'm glad you went that way. Like, he is not good enough. I thought you were going to say, like, he's too. I think he could be
a wider
field. He could be.
You gotta have an arm.
He could be like a.
You gotta have an accurate arm. You gotta throw long balls that are just basic out routes in the CFL.
He could be.
Zach Wilson can't do that.
He's the third stringer for the Jets right now. I was just to check out the final score. Yeah, 34-13. They lost today to the Miami Dolphins. Tim Boyle's not much better.
He might be better though, which is an indictment on Zach Wilson.
That is tough.
Tim Boyle is better than Zach Wilson.
So
Tim Boyle ain't playing the CFL.
I don't know which team needs a quarterback in the CFL. I'd have to do a little research.
I mean, it's not rich with quarterback talent, but then again, Zach Wilson is not rich with quarterback talent.
That's true. All right. Well, that was fun. That's our Friday mailbag. You can send us in stuff during the week if you just want to, like, text us 590-590. You could write, this is for Eilish and Justin, because everyone texts in there, so it gets a little bit messy.
Do it during the show. It'll be easier
That's
for us
also helpful.
It.
You can tweet us at Eilish44, at JC Cuthbert. Instagram handle the same for me. For you, it's JCuthbert590. Nailed it. All right.
I need a unique name like yours.
Yeah, nobody's an Eilish44 out there. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Smith and Jones from Scotiabank Arena. We're about half an hour from tip-off. Chicago here in town to play the Toronto Raptors. It's a in-season tournament game with zero stakes, but revenge. So we'll get to that next up on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.